Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
The Christmas season is here, days away, and nothing says a celebration of the birthday of Jesus like hating women. Like women hating women. The story of St. Mary's College. For everything going on. And don't get me wrong, the border is still the top story in America. I will get to it. Some of these numbers that have come out today regarding the Fed and where they think inflation's going, I've got that as well. Also, a couple of recap things to get to. But the story of St. Mary's College in Indiana, my beloved Indiana, is a story of what happens when you allow liberals to decide. Now, that, for me, is not the everyday approach. But I want to make sure that I'm clear. I don't want us going into the Christmas season with all the joy and the eggnog and the whatnot with any kind of lingering kind of difficulties between us. I want clarity. Always. Liberal women are destructive to society. That is going to get me an email. Possibly a phone call. Let me be even more clear. Liberal white women are destructive to society and to themselves. And until they figure out how not to be fools, we are all in a great amount of danger. Now, if you are a liberal white woman, I want it understood. I'm talking directly to you. And you can look at your beta male husband all you want. He's not going to do anything. Because if he was the kind of guy who was going to do something, he would have left you long ago because you're terrible. Holy cow, Tony. I don't think you understand the Christmas spirit at all. Let me give you the story. You'll see where I'm coming from. St. Mary's is an all-women school. It's an all-women's Catholic college. And the president there, Katie Conboy, decided that the plan going forward is to admit women and to admit men who have been living their lives as women. This is an all-women's college. I could understand why somebody would go to an all-women's college or an all-men's college. They are looking for something specifically. It's not sexual. It is about a concept of focus. It's about a concept of comfort. I don't mind these things. It's like being bothered by a historically black college and university. Why in the world would I be bothered by such a thing? I don't think there's anything wrong with somebody who is, well, name the characteristic, wanting to be around people who are, well, name the characteristic. I don't search out only being around Jews, but I do belong to a synagogue and I do belong to organizations, and my kids do, that have them meeting other kids and socializing with other people who are Jewish. Because while we come from different places, there are certain things that are shared. And I would assume that that's true in a great number of ways. I assume that people who belong to organizations that are military-based, having served or somebody who served, right? There are some shared understandings. And that's important. I think that's valuable. What is not valuable is the idea that this school would state, quote, "We will consider undergraduate applicants whose sex assigned at birth is female or who consistently live and identify as women." That was their plan for 2024. The response was clear.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
Oh, OMG. Are you kidding me right now?
It was very, very clear. This does not work. This is not who we are. This is a school for women. And so the university stated that, you know, hey, people felt this was a dilution of our mission or even a threat to our Catholic identity. As this last month unfolded, we lost people's trust and unintentionally created division where we had hoped for this. And we are deeply sorry, meaning hope for something better. Allow me, President Katie Convoy, St. Mary's College. What possibly could you have hoped for? Except to erase women at a school built for women. Men are not women and women are not men. And by making the statement that you would even consider allowing such a thing, you told women to take a back seat. You worked to erase women. Somebody who identifies as a woman is not a woman, because being a woman is not a subject of make-believe. Does wearing a dress make you a woman? Makeup, heels, earrings, what makes a woman? It's the affects, it's all the other surrounding things. If you believe that, you believe in erasing women. Liberal women hate women. Not because I say so, but because their actions say so. I don't know why you hate women, but I'd really like it if you'd stop. And since this mostly affects liberal white women, and I like how that rolls trippingly off the tongue, liberal white women are the problem. The problem in terms of the abuses of the American populace, the abuses of women, you. You let this happen. You didn't know how to recognize the difference between women and men, that women may want their own university, that they go to that university specifically because they're all women, and it's fine. You're willing to erase them for the sake of some man who is having a mental disorder, because that's what gender dysphoria is, and you want to buy into it? That's hate. I don't know why liberal women hate women, but they do. And that's why liberal women need to be told how wrong they are, how awful they are, how terrible they are, and they need to be told to stop it. And it would help, gentlemen, if it came from their husbands. If you would give up the whole beta track to actually being somebody who is engaged in your family, that would be great. Fire this president, fire the board chair, fire everybody who is part of this situation. And let liberal women, specifically liberal white women, know that you can't erase women. That your inability to stand up for yourself, your desperation to not be bigoted, so you will throw women under the bus and say, just lay back and take it, honey, isn't going to be tolerated. This story is stunning. And you should be disgusted by it. You should be disgusted by the liberal women who try to erase women every day. And you should tell them no. You should call them the bigots that they are. You should tell them to go to hell in a handbasket. And men, maybe it's time to look your wife in the eye and say, you know, what you're advocating for here is just downright blanking disgusting. Why don't you stop it? What's the worst that could happen? You could be happier. I'm Tony Katz. So the Dow is up 30, the NASDAQ is up 33, but there was a story out about how an indicator was making everybody super happy. The Fed's favorite inflation gauge showing prices rose at 3.2% in November, less than expected. And I am forced to wonder, why is it that every headline I read about the economy somehow wants me to believe that everything is just fine when we haven't seen the proof in any extended way of just fine, and things could be not fine tomorrow? Why is there this desire to almost gaslight me? Tony Katz today, good to be with you. Dr. Matt Will joins me, economist at the University of Indianapolis. Caught him on the road, but glad you had the time. Now, I could be way off, but I equate this in the same way when people heard Jerome Powell say they're not going to raise rates and they might have three rate cuts in 2024. He didn't say there will be. He said there might be. And the markets went through the roof. They went insane. What is this number today, the core personal consumption expenditures price index? What are we talking about?
Well, I got to be one of those people that says this is good. We've been talking about, will we find a trend on inflation? And the answer is yes. This is a reinforcing piece of data to what we've seen before. The number went up, excluding energy. That's very important because we know energy is a little crazy at the moment. Excluding energy, it went up 0.1. That means for the year, multiplied by 12, it's under the Fed target. And this is now consistent with other data we've seen recently. So this is good news that inflation is possibly under control. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. This is good. I can't find anything bad. In fact, there's other pieces of detailed information in the report that I'll share with you that are even better.
Give it to me. If I'm seeing it wrong, I want to know. So give it to me.
No, you're not seeing it wrong. No. Be careful. This is where you're correct. Everybody has this euphoria. It's one piece of information. It looks like inflation may be under control. That's a piece of information. That doesn't mean no recession. That doesn't mean economic growth. It doesn't mean expanding manufacturing. It doesn't mean job production. No. It just means inflation is under control. And there was another piece of good news in it. And that is that wages are up. Wages are up significantly for the last month. Multiply by 12 again, you get a pretty decent number. So we see a lot of good news in this report that, quite frankly, surprised me, but is reinforcing what we've seen the last, let's say, 6 weeks.
So this would show that November had these two things that took place. Did something happen in November that would make this possible? Is it as you're describing the Fed's longstanding work in trying to fight the Biden administration? Or is there something else on the world stage or on that economic stage that moved this in a direction that could bring us good news?
You just said it. The second point you made, that this means that in the battle between Jerome Powell and Joe Biden, that Powell is winning. He's got Biden on the ropes. The rest of the world's still in recession. We just had more bad economic news in Europe, the UK, and Germany. These places are not looking good at the moment. So the recession fear is still on my mind, but this reinforces that Jerome Powell is winning the boxing match against Joe Biden.
Talking to Dr. Matt Will, economist at the University of Indianapolis, the wages specifically, the wages going up. We've seen that there's money being spent on wages, but the wages have not kept up with inflation. You're still spending more. You're getting less value for it. All of a sudden, in this report, you're saying this is a good piece. Can you describe how that kind of fleshes itself out?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Tony, that I don't have the report, that I didn't have the numbers memorized, because like I said, I'm on the road, but I believe it's something around 0.3 or so. So multiply that by 12. Again, we're talking, 3.9% wage increase, inflation under 2. That is a good combination. But people are still spending their savings. We have no information that they're not putting on their credit card. That makes me nervous. But they're dipping into their savings. That makes me nervous. That the savings rate is still low. That makes me nervous. So there are other income pieces of information that are nervous, that make me nervous. But the wage increase, this is not a trend yet. Okay, this is 1 month. Inflation, I see a trend. Wage increases, I see 1 month of data. Let's wait and see what happens in the next 2 months.
So let's now make an argument that we can keep this up in terms of the inflation, And if we're going to see these 0.1s, we're going to be under the 2% inflation target for the Fed. Is this now the indicator of quote unquote soft landing?
It's more than soft landing. It's possibly not going to recession. That is a real possibility at this point. Now, then the battle switches. Let's forget about Biden versus Powell. It's U.S. versus global economy. Because the global economy is saying, come over here. We have this huge recession. Follow us. And the U.S. is kind of resisting that urge. So that's a more important battle now that we got to start looking at.
This, the what's happening globally, specifically in Europe, and you wonder how it doesn't have an effect. Specifically, you know, we've talked about oil prices. We've seen oil prices go down because of the total lack of manufacturing in China, their lockdowns, etc. Then we've seen because of the Houthi rebels and the work, the attacks in the Red Sea, the Gulf of Oman, the Gulf of Aden, etc. We have seen these oil prices come back up. So this is an external force causing this to happen. Is there something economists like yourself look at on the global side and say that could have an effect on us here?
When you say an effect on us, are you referring to effect as in recession causing or something else?
The idea that while inflation is maybe coming down, which would be great, by the way, I'm in favor of this. Is there something happening on the global side that could then bring inflation back to us or cause some of these numbers that you're seeing and feeling good about to reverse?
Okay, I'm only feeling good about one number. Let's not exaggerate things. I'm feeling good about inflation. I'm not feeling good about anything else at the moment. And actually, inflation, I think, can be tamed if the Republicans can be a firewall against what Biden's doing. So that's one. And secondly, if they can accomplish that, the rest of the world can't cause inflation. A disciplined monetary policy can prevent inflation. And if Jerome Powell sticks to his guns and doesn't succumb to the pressure of Wall Street and politicians to cut rates, we could have inflation under control now. And then we got to turn our attention to fighting a global recession.
But what part of it is to be fought? You know, I've made the argument when Biden and others talk about how much better we're doing compared to other nations. No one cares about the other nations. They care about how we're doing. And if we're doing better and the economy is moving in the right direction, this is great news for everybody. I want it to be easier to afford a dozen eggs. So what fight against the global recession is necessary for the United States to get involved with here?
Let me say something very clear. I am not an isolationist. I believe in free trade. I believe in the kind of Reagan revolution where you had to interact with the world. And the reason is because the data tells me 92%, let me say that, 92% of everything you buy was on a container ship. So if the rest of the world goes in the toilet, they're going to suck us down with it. So it's important that the rest of the world be economically vibrant because they can impact us. Inflation, they can't have a lot of control over us. Only we can print money. But they can help influence because 92% of everything we deal with is globally trade-oriented.
Say that last part again.
92% of everything you buy was on a container ship, which means the global economy is interconnected. We can't be the sole prosperous nation in the world. Everybody has to be prosperous.
This is what concerns me. This is what concerns me as we talk about oil prices moving their way back up, even if it's because of what's happening with the Houthi rebels and what's happening with Iran, if there's no push against this. But you look at these numbers from the Commerce Department and you're like, this shows an opportunity. This shows something that we can look at and feel good about and hope that it trends. And for that, I appreciate the insight. Dr. Matt Will, economist at the University of Indianapolis, thank you for taking the time. You will never, ever hear me wish for bad things. I don't do it. Some people do it politically. That's nutty. That's nutty, silly, nutty. But as I've said many times, you tell me the kids are all right. You tell me everything's great. You tell me everything is square. I'm not that guy. But I'll take a good news report and I'll look at this and say, okay, now I understand it. Good. Hopefully it keeps going. This is Tony Katz today. Okay. Ron DeSantis has a problem. This is nuts. Because this is an admission of broke. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. It's good to be with you. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. I don't spend much time digging into some of the deep details about super PACs and levels of support. I take much more of a large-scale overview. But it got announced that the chief strategist for the big DeSantis super PAC, Never Back Down, left. Walked away. The super PAC has had issue on issue on issue. And when Jeff Rowe is his name, left, he was talking about statements from the Washington Post. They had published a really big story on tensions between the DeSantis campaign team and the super PAC. Jeff Rowe is like, blank this. Well, I'm not sticking with this group. This is an unwanted distraction at a critical time for Governor DeSantis. So he leaves. This super PAC has had issues. Then today, you learn that the super PAC, Never Back Down, has backed down from 2.5 million ads in Iowa and New Hampshire. Now look, I may cover this stuff more often than you cover this stuff, but we've been doing this long enough. 2.5 million they've decided not to spend? Let's now ask the question. You are less than a month from the Iowa caucus and, yeah, the New Hampshire primary. You tell me right now why it is that you would all of a sudden not spend $2.5 million in Iowa and New Hampshire. Go on. Tell me. Don't forget to phrase it in the form of a question. You're no longer going to spend $2.5 million in ads in Iowa, New Hampshire. You are the key DeSantis super PAC. What is, we've run out of money? That's the only answer. The DeSantis super PAC, less than a month to the Iowa caucus, is out of money? Well, Tony, they didn't say they were out of money. Well, that's fantastic. I'm seeing that they're not spending $2.5 million. There's only one answer. They ran out of money. Now, if you listen to them, they'll tell you, well, look, this group is going to handle this, and that group is going to handle that. We're going to handle the ground game. Nah. No, 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 no. That dog, as the kids say, won't hunt. Let's take a look at New Hampshire, shall we? Take a look at New Hampshire. That St. Anselm poll. Trump 44, Haley 30, Christie 12, DeSantis 6. By the way, the pressure is going to be intense after Christmas for Chris Christie to get out of the race. It's going to be intense. for Christie to get out of the race and coalesce behind Haley and make this a two-person race. It's coming. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. This is unbelievable. Unbelievable to watch this implosion. What else could one possibly call it? The latest poll in Iowa is Fox Business, which has Trump 52, DeSantis 18, Haley 16. You need, if you're DeSantis, the second place finish. You need it. You need it more than you need oxygen. You're not going to spend $2.5 million, okay? I have not allowed myself to engage this idea of it's a two-man race. It's Trump and it's Haley. For a series of reasons, starting with I want to see the Iowa caucuses. And then following up with I want to see the Iowa caucuses. I have been very, very clear that Nikki Haley has an easier path than Ron DeSantis. I've also been very, very clear that this DeSantis team can't run a campaign, but DeSantis on paper, the actual actions he's taken, that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted. Now, I may not get what I want. This is remarkable to witness. Now, everything is still possible. That's what a lot of DeSantis people are going to say to themselves. Everything is still possible. Money could come from somewhere else. Other people could be putting it in. But it doesn't seem that it's going to be the case. What has happened with Never Back Down is just remarkable. Because not only has this guy Jeff Rowe left, last month it was Chris Jankowski, who was the CEO of Never Back Down. He resigned. There was supposedly a meeting between Never Back Down and DeSantis aides that almost came to fisticuffs. Something else to note within this whole conversation. I think this team's, somebody had sent me the number, and I'll utilize that number, although I could be off by a little bit. $200 million. That's what the Never Back Down team had. $200 million. The question before us is, where is the money? I don't know if we need to do that again. Where the hell did $200 million go? Up in smoke? Somebody, my friend had texted me, where'd the $200 million go? And I said, I don't know. I guess those boot lifts cost a lot of money. I mean, that's just rude. That's just rude right there. But it had to go somewhere. This is disastrous. Disastrous for a DeSantis. Is it overcomable? A good result in Iowa is overcomable. I mean, it is. You can overcome anything if you've got a good result in Iowa. The ads need to get placed. People need to be reminded. And your people still need to be convinced you're the right guy and willing to come out and actually caucus for you. That has to happen. But this is... Oh. You've got Haley surging and everyone talking about that. And you're canceling ads. Kids, I don't know if you know what surrender looks like, but it kind of looks something like that. Yes, it does. I'm Tony Katz and this is Tony Katz Today.
Well, if you've been following me from the start, you'll know I was very wary about Israel going into Gaza for two reasons. One, it clearly had no end game. It had no defined end goal. And so it was launching its army against Hamas in retaliation for the murderous and barbaric attack by Hamas on Israel on October 7th, fully justified by Israel in responding to that, of course, but it had no end game. That is, it had no political goal in Gaza in mind that would allow Israel to either stay there indefinitely in a way that was politically, diplomatically sustainable and have some Palestinian partner. Why doesn't it have an endgame? Because members of Israel's far-right government under Netanyahu refused to have any talk of Palestinian state or the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank taking over Gaza.
So why would they? That's Thomas Friedman of the New York Times speaking on CNBC. You want to talk about a terrible take. Terrible take. The end game? Hamas gone. That's the end game. Well, what happens next? I don't know. That part is secondary. You can't have anything until Hamas is gone, which is the end game. After that, you figure out a way. But we should give it to the Palestinian Authority? To the terrorist Mahmoud Abbas? What kind of nonsense play is this? Of course Netanyahu is right to say no to that. His far-right government. Shut your mouth. You don't give terrorists, terrorist sympathizers, or the terrorist adjacent the opportunity to have a landscape by which to engage more terrorism. You haven't figured that out? The winning isn't once. The winning has to be for decades. You have to keep these people out. The only way it works is to keep them out. Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. Ignorant, ignorant, ignorant position. Because it's predicated on this idea that somehow these lefties, they know how to get this done. You have to learn how to deal with your neighbors. You have to kill the enemy until they're dead. That is not a barbarian's position. That is understanding the facts of the situation. Something that Thomas Friedman is unwilling to do. If the argument is there was no end game. What end game did you want? Well, Hamas promises not to fight, and then here's what Israel will pay over here. Here's what the United States will pay over here. Here's what Europe will pay over here, and then everybody will live in peace. Is Hamas gone? Well, I don't think it's about Hamas being gone. It's about Israel learning its lesson here, and the United States providing the... Is Hamas still going to engage in terrorism? Well, look, I think you have to understand their position, and they have a lot of support, and the people of Gaza deserve this and that, and Israel should do this, because, you know, they've been so oppressive. The end game for Thomas Friedman is Israel ceases to exist. Now, he doesn't believe that, of course. He doesn't believe that. But take a listen to what it is he's saying. There's no end game because you haven't figured out a way to keep Hamas there. And, oh, Netanyahu's far-right government. Anytime they use the term far-right government, they're saying they want Hamas to survive. It seems obvious. It always seems to be in tandem. The very problem with elitism is that it very often shields one from utilizing their mind. The elitism tries to come up with all the sorts of ways to explain why you aren't appreciative enough of their mind, as opposed to the recognition that 2 + 2 = 4. The end game is Hamas is gone. They're all dead, and the organization ceases to exist. Now, if one is really honest, it ceases to exist to the very best of Israel's ability. I don't argue that you're going to 100% eradicate. You do the very best you can. And then you say, okay, what are the conditions on the ground for now a rebuild of Gaza and actual peace with a neighbor? You don't think the Marshall Plan went through a couple of revisions? The end game of World War II was not the rebuilding of Germany. The end game was the destruction of Hitler, the destruction of the Japanese Empire, and their unilateral, unconditional surrender. Everything else came afterwards. Everything else came afterwards. Look, I don't claim to be the world's greatest history student, but am I wrong? Because I must admit, I don't think I'm wrong. Beating the Germans, beating the imperialist Japanese that bombed us at Pearl Harbor. You attack us, we come at you. And then you beg for forgiveness. Which is what happened when we got the Japanese to admit that Hirohito wasn't a god. You can see that a couple different ways. This is an ugly position. And it's the elitist position. And the problem with the elitist position is that they're so in love with their pseudo-intellectual rantings and positionings, they lose sight of the basics. It's like going camping. Well, you gotta make sure you've got the campsite. You gotta make sure you keep it clean. Oh, you gotta make sure you protect the environment. And you gotta make sure you're this far away from this and that far away from that. You know what you need? Food. Sometimes there are just the basics that have to get handled. Sometimes the answer really is that simple. The win for Israel is the destruction of Hamas. It's the win for all of us. It's the win for free and thinking people. It's the win for civilization. That's the end game. Everything else is everything else. The end game for Israel is the elimination of Hamas so they can live in peace. And I hope it happens speedily and in my lifetime. Merry Christmas. This is Tony Katz today.